Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
These are the Keshi Tapes. U-Man and Favaz explore the backstories and interviews heard on Keshi, the longest-running rock station in the country.
Hey, welcome to the Keshi Tapes podcast. I'm John Hewlett along with...
Favaz.
And you can follow me on Instagram. I'm Johnny Hewlett.
What, you're doing that already?
Yeah, just in case I forget.
You just
want to
get that out there?
Got to run the numbers up, man. I got to make money on the internet. I'm half-ass retired now.
That's right. Half-ass retired DJ.
Less money coming in. Oh, yeah. I'm also the half-ass retired DJ on Instagram, too. Yeah. I got to do more on that. Okay. Now, we have another old interview that Jack Silver did when Jack Silver was on our air staff here in the early 1980s, late 70s, early 1980s. As I explained on some of his interviews in the past, I'll do it again for the continuity of this show.
And there's always people that have never heard of Jack Silver.
Right. You know? So he would do a feature on the weekend called The Rock Report. During the week, he would get these rock stars to call the radio station to talk about whatever they had going on, a new release or something, or an upcoming concert tour. And he would casually interview them, not live on the air. And then he would take parts of those interviews and put them in his Rock Report things that would air on the weekends.
Yes, he would.
So these interviews are not real. Sometimes they're very lackadaisical and kind of loose. But it's just a casual conversation with these people. And this one we're going to do today is of Tom Hamilton of the band Aerosmith.
Yeah, you know, he's had cancer. He survived it. We've featured him before on the Keshi Tapes in an interview that I did back in the, I would say early 2000s, I would say. Mm-hmm. And how did you get all of Jack's tapes? Did you kick his ass or what?
No, he left them behind.
Wow.
In the basement of the Union Station.
Wow, he did.
Annex building we were in.
Wow.
And yeah, and so I was, you know, when Hubbard bought Emmis and bought Keshi, a lot of that stuff just transferred over to the Hubbard storage facility. And when they realized that they didn't have room for all this stuff anymore, they told me, hey, take it with you, take it home, and find out if anything's good in there to keep, and everything else throw away.
This is how
I found this.
I was hoping that you kicked his ass and there would be a story behind that.
No.
Oh, okay.
No, right. I probably could back in the No.
All right.
All right. So, all right. Tom Hamilton, 1982, 83-ish, I think it is. Let's see what was going on in Tom Hamilton's life at that moment in time with Jack Silver. Here we go.
And I got the tape rolling, so why don't you just give me a quick level here and we'll see how you're looking.
All right. St. Louis, KSHE, 314-842-2052.
Okay, we got it.
Okay.
All right.
Well, that...
What was that?
That must have been the number that he called in on.
Oh, what was the number again?
842.
Yeah.
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 All right. If I can ask you a few questions, and then maybe we'll just get a station promo from you.
Uh-huh.
All right. I guess I'd just like to basically begin, if you can give me kind of a bird's eye view at the various changes that have taken place with Aerosmith of recent, and maybe explain how the current lineup is feeling to you. So basically, first, the changes that took place with Perry out and Whitford gone, and the present lineup, and how you're feeling about that.
All right, so Perry,
yes,
that's when he left,
and
Brad Whitford is back in the band. I didn't know that he left.
Yeah, he left briefly. I think he did an album with Derek St. Holmes.
He did.
Yeah. It was called Whitford St. Holmes.
Oh.
Very, very...
very original.
Clever and original. Yeah. And we played music from it. As a matter of fact, there is a Keshi classic off that album that I have forgotten about that just now I just remember. I'll have to look for that because it might be something I want to add to the Keshi classics list.
All right. Okay. Well, Jimmy's been in the band since late 1979. He just happened to be the third guy that we auditioned. And he worked out to be the perfect guy from the standpoint of writing with Steven and his look and his style. And so we lucked out on that. And then within a month after that, we were on the road and did a 20-city tour. And then did something that we had wanted to do for a long time, which was take a break from the road and sort of reevaluate where our creativity was coming from, and just kind of be able to have the time to withdraw and take a look at ourselves. So we took a couple of months off, and we went into the rehearsal hall, and we started coming up with the riffs for the album. And let's see.
Come on, Tom.
Rick came along when we were just about finishing the album. He
who? Rick?
Well, he was, first of all, he was talking about Jimmy Crespo,
yeah,
who took Joe Perry's place.
Right.
I'm not sure who Rick was.
Yeah, Rick.
Rick.
Hmm.
Played on Cheshire Cat, and he sang on Lightning Strikes. But basically,
Rick Dufay.
He must be talking about Night in the Ruts, because that's the Aerosmith record that I think that Joe Perry was not on.
Rock in a Hard Place, for sure. Night in the Ruts. Yeah,
Rock
who's
in
on,
a Hard Place.
Who's on? Joe Perry was still on Night in the Ruts.
He was.
But Rock in a Hard Place was...
Was that the only Aerosmith record that he didn't perform on? Was he out of the band then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, he was out of the band there. Yeah, that personnel was Steven Tyler, Jimmy Crespo, Tom Hamilton, Joey Kramer, and Rick Dufay.
Rick Dufay.
On rhythm guitar. Rick Dufay on rhythm guitar.
Hmm.
Yeah. Jimmy Crespo, lead guitar.
It was, well, the guitar playing is 95% Jimmy's, because he was with us from the beginning of this project.
Sweet. Maybe I can zero in on a couple of the members that did depart. You being an original member of Aerosmith, what did the loss of a top-notch guitar player like Joe Perry mean to Aerosmith? The loss, what did that mean to you guys?
Well, it's funny, you know, looking back on it, it was, you know, I suppose... You know, I can look back on it with sadness a little bit, you know, in a certain way. But at the time it happened, it was just something that had to happen. The band knew it, and Joe knew it, and there was sort of four guys in the band thinking one way, and one guy in the band thinking the other way, and you know, we just knew that in order for the entity to stay together, we would have to make the change. We've seen Joe, you know, a few times since you know, the big split, and
so there's really no hard feelings there.
No, you know, I can't. It wasn't exactly, you know, a big slap on the back and you know, a hearty handshake goodbye when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, gradually, you know, we got on friendlier terms, because I think even
so. There you go. Yeah.
So yeah. So, Well, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, at this point in time, keep it in mind, we got to keep it in context, he has no idea that in the next album, after Rock in a Hard Place, they would all be together again.
Right.
And then start releasing those albums in the 80s that went...
Explosion.
Fantastic for them.
Yes.
But at this moment in time, they're down. They're down in the ruts.
Yeah.
You know, to borrow a phrase.
A night in the ruts. But,
night in the ruts, yeah.
But the Joe Perry Project came out, mm-hmm. and what was that song?
Oh my God.
I can't think of that song.
Yeah,
but Aerosmith ended up doing it
something,
too.
Something with the music.
Let the music do the talking.
Let the music do the talking, yeah.
And, boy, that was a good song.
Yeah, it's a good song.
And then Aerosmith.
It's a Acacia classic, as I said.
Yeah,
so.
Start. Nobody in the band wanted to Joe do anything but, you know, go out and be able to, you know, do it on his own once he was out there.
All right. We find that Aerosmith, you know, definitely a band that we all grew up with and continue to enjoy here in the 80s. You've been with the same label since the beginning, if I'm to understand correctly.
Right.
Well, maybe you can speak to the importance of a record label to a band, and obviously you've had a good relationship with Columbia because you have been with them so long. So what is it that a label can do for a band that will either make them stick or make them wander?
Well, I think it's important for... Now, we don't do things the way most bands do.
Yeah, Columbia stuck with them for a long time,
yeah.
But it was Geffen Records.
Yes.
That would after this point...
Permanent Vacation on.
Yes, that was all Geffen Records stuff. So they it was that record company that helped rehabilitate Aerosmith.
Bands do. Most bands have a very direct relationship with the record company while they're making an album, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of, our method is we just go off on our own and they wait until we've finished it and then we invite them over to hear it. But basically, the most important thing that a record company can do is promote the band when it's out, when the record is done. And that's only after they make sure that when they hear the record that they think it's something that they can get behind. And if they decide they can get behind it, then the important thing for them to do is to promote it as much as possible as far as displays in record stores and ads and, you know, all that kind of thing. And, you know, plus the local promotion, people all over the world have to do their part to try to get songs played on the radio.
I think the way we used to work with the record companies is whatever it cost the band to make the albums,
mm-hmm.
they took that out of the band's eventual profits. Mm. But as far as advertising and promoting the record, that money would come out of the record company's
right.
pockets.
And they would come to radio stations like KSHE and say, hey, play, what do you think of this? Play this. Mm-hmm. And then we would. And then people would buy it and, you know, whatever.
So financially, there was a separation there. Once the band got the record done, and they would, a lot of bands would try to do it in a economical fashion because they
right.
knew that it was really their money they were spending.
Right.
Then they wanted the record company to go all out and spend the record company's money to promote the hell out of the album.
Right.
And sometimes the record company would say, we don't think it's that good of an album. We're going to hold back. Or they go in full blast.
Yes.
So that's
and that has happened. That the, you know, the, they won't go full blast, and they it's been done to many, many bands over time.
And then sometimes the artist gets lucky and the record does kind of get a life of its own. Record company realizes they made a mistake. Oh, wow. Well, let's see what else we can get off of this. And then they might start spending money
like Layla.
To promote it. Yeah.
Remember?
Layla, that's a KSHE story.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, we should tell that story then since we brought it up.
Well, Shelley Grafman, you know, he was the one. I mean, that was the second or third episode that we did. You could find wherever you, Shelley Grafman, you can hear him tell that story.
Well, maybe we don't tell the story and let them go to that episode.
Okay, John, that's a great
it's called
thought.
Cross promotions. It's a great story, a great KSHE story, and it's related to Layla, one of the more iconic rock songs of all time. Go to the Shelley Grafman KSHE Tapes podcast.
Yes.
And they're all up there. All our podcasts
all
are
them,
available.
All of
right?
them. Yeah, Shelley. Over 230 of them.
Yeah. Okay, back to this one.
Okay.
But generally with us, what it comes down to is we're the ones that promote our records. We go out on tour, and we play directly to the people. And so I'd say as far as promotion goes, it's pretty much our job at this point.
I see. You mentioned
that is another way that the band can promote
themselves.
And then that costs money too.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
Touring, and Aerosmith is famous for hitting the road and really, you know, taking it to the people. And you've toured with, you know, through the years, probably every big name that there is, and then some. Who do you like to tour with? Who are the guys that you kind of, you know, the Aerosmith boys really get along with? And then maybe on the other hand, who are the real, well, dicks that, you know, sometimes
did sometimes he say that?
Yeah
wow, Jack, way to go.
Like I said, the interview wasn't on the air, so he could he'd be nice.
Yeah, Tom Hamilton laughed too.
Yeah.
to get back on the bus because
nobody ever wants to tell you who the dicks are though. That's
right,
that's
we'll see
thing.
If he
you
does
I always ask that question. They always hem and haw on that one. Once in a great while you get lucky and somebody does say
we'll
something.
See if he does.
Let's see if he does.
You're gonna see him in the next city.
Well, we're having a lot of fun touring with Travers.
Pat Travers.
Yeah, Pat Travers, who, by the way,
we
is
have.
Going to be one of our next
podcasts.
Well, soon to be one of our next podcasts.
Mm-hmm. Good, you know, the two bands together. And I think one of the more fun bands that we ever toured with was when AC/DC was opening up for us.
All right.
Everybody has fun AC/DC stories to tell. That's one thing you hear over and over.
What's that?
Everybody's got fun AC/DC stories to tell.
Yes,
bands
yes,
tour with
because
AC/DC.
Bon Scott.
Yeah.
This was, you know, a few years back. This was about 4 or 5 years ago, of course, because they're huge now. They were a lot of fun, and we just dug them. We dug the fact that they were into total energy output, and we just got such a huge kick out of them that we sort of took them under our wing and made sure that they always got treated right at gigs and all that kind of stuff.
And who are the guys that, you could do without?
Oh, here we go.
Here we go.
Come
he
on,
won't
Tom.
Say it. Come on, Tom.
Come on.
I wish he would, but.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's see now.
Unless the list is too long.
I've heard some stories about Aerosmith in the past. I can't remember them right now, but I know that they've been involved in run-ins with other bands.
Really?
Because, Steven Tyler, he's pretty proud guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to
He runs that show.
Doesn't want to get out rocked on a stage by an opening band or whatever, and right. He does run that show. So let's.
Well, I don't want to put anybody down. I mean, there's been a couple of bands that
Boo-hoo.
We used to open for back in the beginning that were, less than encouraging.
Nice.
So it was the other way around. They were opening.
Less
for,
than encouraging.
Yeah.
Okay.
BTO was never one of our favorite bands to tour with. I don't even know if anybody remembers that.
Bachman Turnover Drive.
Doesn't know anybody remembers.
Well, he has no idea the station that he's talking to.
Well, this is 1982, though. I mean, BTO is still pretty damn big. Mm. I mean, they're still playing, getting a lot of airplay.
Turner Overdrive.
Yeah.
They were kind of standoffish.
Huh.
Okay, I won't put you on the spot. That's okay.
Yeah.
And really, it's fun.
Well, we got an answer out of him. That was good.
Yeah.
Jack. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'll jump off it.
It's funny because BTO is still big here in St. Louis, obviously, because we're about five years in the past.
Jack just slammed St. Louis. He said, we're
5 years in the past.
BTO's big here because we're 5 years in the past. Wow. Yeah. Jack's from Chicago, by the way, so he was not a native St. Louisan.
Okay, I have a question that maybe you can answer, and I hope it'll be interesting to our listeners. One of the favorite Aerosmith songs over the years has been Train Kept a Rollin'.
Yeah.
And it was, it's a song that begins in the studio.
From that era, Sweet Emotion, he wrote Sweet Emotion, Tom Hamilton.
Right, the bass line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then segues to the live setting. Whose idea was that, and how did that ever come about?
Well, first of all, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Oh, ready for this, listeners? Here we go. Tom
right.
Hamilton with some good scoop.
All right.
No.
What? Wait a minute. I got to roll that back. We missed it. Hold on.
First of all, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
We faked it.
No.
They faked it?
We didn't really do it live in front of an audience.
What?
The live part is live. But it was recorded in the studio. And when I say live, I mean we didn't go in and do overdubs and stuff like that like you usually do on a studio cut.
Mm-hmm.
We just went in and we banged it out. And it was our producer's idea to go ahead and put an applause track in there because we figured, we really did go in there and play it live, so we wanted to, keep the live ambience happening.
So they played it live in the studio, but not in front of an audience.
Right, and if you remember the recording of that, the crowd comes up at the end.
Yeah.
during the break.
Yeah.
And,
So now when you listen to that, you could be able to probably hear the false,
right,
quick increase in volume and then out.
Right.
Because it's hard to really fake a good live crowd noise. I mean,
it sure is.
Yeah. Yeah.
See.
So there's your gigantic Aerosmith revelation from 1982.
Oh, my dreams, or my illusions have been shattered.
Now, meanwhile, it's 1983.
Yeah.
I'm saying 1982.
Well, we'll edit that out.
Yeah.
Okay, since we are talking about 1983, let's talk about it. Aerosmith comes to rock and roll radio with what we see as really a definitive Aerosmith album, and we've kind of missed it for a while. What are the feelings of you, Tom?
What he's saying there is we listened to it and we didn't like it at first. And so we just decided we weren't going to play much off of it. Like, for instance, the track listing, the songs Jailbait, Lightning Strikes, Bitches Brew, Bolivian, Ragamuffin, Cry Me a River, Prelude to Joni, Joni's Butterfly, Rockin' a Hard Place, Cheshire Cat. I think that's the only song we played for just a short period of time.
I don't know.
Jig is up and push comes to shove. So there was not much on that album that got popular.
Yeah.
Fulton, for, you know, been with the band for years. How does this Rockin' a Hard Place feel to you? And are you folks happy with the success that you are enjoying with the record?
Well, right. As far as the success we're having with the record, it's kind of something that you can't. We're thinking of success with this album in terms of the recognition it's getting, as opposed to, you know, album sales.
Mm-hmm.
Because we.
So we're not expecting much in terms of sales.
Yes.
Yeah. It's getting.
Tom said that himself.
Yes, he did. It's getting attention because of who's not on it.
Right.
And that's Joe Perry. Yeah. And by the way, Tom Hamilton gets no writing credits on that album.
Hmm.
Oh, actually, yeah, I got a half of one on Cry Me a River. I'm sorry.
Right. We're very happy about how it came out, especially because, I think you just said it. I think you just said it was a definitive Aerosmith album.
Yes.
Okay. Now that's really gratifying because we've got two new guitar players,
and
when people come to us and say, "Hey, man, that's Aerosmith. That sounds like, you know, Aerosmith," it lets us know that we did the right thing, that we picked the right guys, and that committing ourselves to toughing it out and staying together was really worth it after all.
Well, yeah, I'm not just passing a bunch of bull down the line here, because really, when I first got the record as music director, I was hoping, gosh darn, I hope this is, you know, the Aerosmith we can count on. And when we dropped the needle, it really has been, and we've been playing about three tracks. Lightning Strikes is probably the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I think Joni's Butterfly is just terrific.
Is that right?
Yeah, I love it. We played that out of the box, and then we kind of got the idea that, well, Lightning Strikes was pushing a little harder nationally, and we went with that. So we really have been enjoying the record a lot. And maybe, since I do have you on the phone, is Joni's Butterfly dirty? Is that is that supposed to be something dirty?
No, I think, you know, all of our songs sound dirty. But
that's because you got Steven Tyler singing them and writing them.
No, that was just sort of, I don't want to try too much to explain Steven's lyrics,
okay.
But I think...
To your point.
He got a couple of the ideas from that, sort of from a dream he had.
I see.
About a unicorn.
About a unicorn.
Steven Tyler dreams of unicorns.
Oh.
Unicorns and candies and,
yes.
And
puppy dogs and clouds.
Puppy dogs and pink flowers. I'm sure that's all he's thinking about, yes.
You know, that's as far as I can really speak for him.
Okay. And let's see, I was going to ask a question. Jeez, it's been a long day. This is a question.
It's been a long day. Yes, it has.
Yes, Jack, wrap this up, buddy.
I do like to ask, especially bands that have the career span that you have, when you are in a city, well, say you're in St. Louis and you're listening to Casey and Sweet Emotion or Dream On comes on the radio, does that still give you guys a little bit of a charge to hear those choice tracks from the years gone by? Or are you guys saying, well, I wish they'd play some of that new stuff? Or how do you feel about that? Because really, the truth of the matter is Dream On and the like is still just as hot and well-accepted and well-perceived in the listener's mind as it's ever been.
And the same goes for 2023.
Yeah,
yeah,
for sure.
Well, I would say that, I'd say it's 50-50. I really get when I hear an Aerosmith song on the radio, it really gets me off.
Okay.
I have to say that is one of the most rewarding things to hear. Music being broadcast to, you know, potentially hundreds of thousands of people.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if you've been hearing a lot of old stuff, sometimes if it just happens that you've been hearing a lot of the old stuff, then you do say, well, why don't they play some of the new stuff? But in general, when I hear any Aerosmith on the radio, it gets me off.
Okay, and I guess as a final note, as it relates to this current tour, what should we expect, all of us who have the tickets for the Aerosmith show? What are we going to expect at the concert? Is it going to be, what is an Aerosmith gig like now in 1983? What should we look for?
Okay, the band is evolved to the point where not only do we put out energy, but it comes out with about 10 times as much finesse as we ever played before, meaning the sound is clearer, you can hear the instruments better, we play with more dynamics, we have three vocalists.
This is the album, the first album produced by Jack Douglas, too. So he was instrumental in changing that band.
I would correct you there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Jack Douglas Toys in the Attic and all that.
Yes. He did do some of those older albums. Yeah, mm-hmm. So he's back.
Yes.
Yeah.
As opposed to one. So we've got harmonies. And it's just a real tight, high-energy show. I forgot to mention, we've got a guy with us on the road named Bob Mayo playing keyboards.
Bob Mayo. He played with Peter Frampton.
Oh, did he really?
Yes, I know that.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
Peter Frampton and...
There you go.
Been touring with Foreigner.
So keyboards is something that we haven't heard within an Aerosmith sound, right? Is that?
Well, we've done a little bit with keyboards, but we're using them a little bit more now. We're using synthesizer. Hmm. And... It just adds so much more to the sound. I think people that have heard us before will be pretty amazed at how the...
A lot of bands at this point in time were starting to go in that direction, too.
Yeah.
Bands who had never used synthesizer before. Rush,
it was
for
in
instance.
The 80s. Hello.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
And sounds, because it's definitely Aerosmith. But,
it's the updated version.
Right.
Kick ass. All right. Well, first of all, again.
Kick ass.
Now we
kick
are.
Ass. Kick ass.
Oh, here we go. These are the little promos, little drop-ins for the radio station.
All right, wait a minute. I wrote something backwards here.
Okay.
They always do.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
Hi, this is Tom Hamilton from Aerosmith, and you're on KSHE 95. We'll be at the Checker Dome this Thursday night. Be there.
Perfect.
Checker Dome.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now let's get one that says tomorrow night.
Oh, okay. He's... Wow.
We used to have to do that on everything, on all our commercials and everything. Wow. Like if an event happened on Sunday, we'd have to say, the promotion started 2 weeks ago, Sunday, November 25th, then the next week, this Sunday, November 25th.
Really?
Then this, tomorrow, September 25th.
Wow.
Later today, we'd have to do those updates all the time, and it was a pain in the ass.
Wow.
Now with this type technology, the computers, you can edit those things in so quickly and easy, it's ridiculous. But back then, it was a lot of extra work. It was like a pain in the ass.
Tom Hamilton from Aerosmith. You're on KSHE 95, and we want to see everybody tomorrow night out at the Checker Dome.
Okay, and the final one, you're real excited because tonight's the night.
There it is.
This is Tom Hamilton from Aerosmith on KSHE 95, and we want to see everybody in St. Louis at the Checker Dome tonight.
Okay, beautiful. Yes, sir.
There we go.
There we go.
Tom Hamilton back in 1983. Interview.
I love these old interviews.
Yeah, me too. I do too. It's fun to put them in perspective too and think, wow, little did they know something else was going to happen after that. Because after this interview, Aerosmith becomes huge again.
Yeah, Eightbound in 87, 88.
Yeah.
Is when the Permanent Vacation came out. And so,
I think there was another album after this one and then Permanent Vacation.
Wow.
And that one after this one didn't do very well either. But the band was all back together again. And then Permanent Vacation came out and changed everything.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. That's the podcast for today. I'm John Hewlett. You can follow me on Instagram. I'm Johnny Hewlett, and also the half-assed retired DJ.
And Casey Guy is my handle. AMF.
Bye.
The Casey Tapes with you, man, and Favaz. For more on the history of Casey, go to Casey95.com or the Casey mobile app.